Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Hello.
And it is our goal to podcast about birds.
Soon it will just be our goal to pod.
And it's getting harder because I have... Well, we can talk about this now. I have signed up for a really cool new project.
Yes.
We're going to have another contest. Last year, I had so much fun doing the Send Me Your Worst Bird Photo contest, and Swarovski gave away my old spotting scope that I used for them for a long time. We're doing another scope giveaway!
What?
I know, I'm so excited! And because I'm just really a fan of trying to make a contest for people with a level playing field, I don't want to just do Send Me Your Bird Photo.
For people who suck.
No. And look, if you can take really great pictures of birds, you don't need a Swarovski scope. Okay. I want someone who...
Sucks?
No. Someone who maybe just... It's not... It takes a lot of money to get a really great spotting scope.
Right. Because they suck so much.
The people, not the scope. No, but anyway, so we have made a web series...
You have made...
Yes. Well, you've given me advice.
Yes.
But anyway, I was having dinner with my friend Clay from Swarovski, and I said, you know, I really want to do a web series because, you know, it's getting easier to do that stuff with video editing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I said, but I think it would be fun to do it where the people watching have to figure out clues that lead to an overall thing. And so just over dinner in Wabasha, we came up with this idea. Okay. And... So we presented it to his boss, and Swarovski said, hey, that sounds like fun. Yes, how can we help you make this? So in May, we're debuting a web series.
Mm-hmm.
Each episode is going to have a theme, or it's going to have a clue to the show's overall theme. There are 8 episodes. Each episode is 5 to 8 minutes long. And so all the birds are a clue, and you have to guess what the theme is. And if you do, you email that to me, and then you'll be in a drawing, and Dougal, our rabbit, will probably pick the winner again.
All right.
And if you're the winner, then you get a spotting scope. I might try to round up a couple of other prizes, too. But
okay.
So, yeah, if you are a bird feeding, or I shouldn't say bird, if you are a bird-related company and you would be interested in sponsorship opportunities with this project, we still have some sponsorship opportunities. But anyway, I'm really excited. What I'm really excited about is my friend Clay.
Clay Aiken?
No, Clay Taylor.
Oh.
He has a ton of really great bird footage, but he never has time to post them. So I'm always like, dude, why don't you just give me a thumb drive with your best video footage and I will just post it for you. But this is going to be a way for me to use a lot of his really cool video footage. There's going to be footage in there that I haven't been able to use in my blog. And it's just really fun and challenging. So in May, we're going to debut this. And yeah, you will have a chance to win a spotting scope this summer. So anyway, I'm just really excited. So I just came back from Florida to film some of the incidental scenes.
And boy, are your arms tired.
Oh, ho. Yeah, but I always try to plan trips for work in the wintertime to someplace like Florida or the Rio Grande Valley. So that way I'm going someplace warm.
Right.
It did not work out well.
Cry me a friggin' river.
So when I travel, especially if I'm going between someplace warm and someplace cold, I'm now in the habit of taking either some of my field clothing or my running outfits because it's good all-purpose weather stuff. It's good warm and cold. It wicks sweat and all that stuff. I ended up wearing my running clothes almost 3 days straight in Florida because it was so cold.
It was a lot colder in Minnesota, let me tell you.
I know. It was below zero. Well... My friend Chris Benesh, I think he's leading a tour down around South Padre Island in the Rio Grande Valley. And he had a post on Facebook that said he was in Harlingen. It was 36 degrees. The hotel wasn't insulated. So that's part of the problem is it's not like here where buildings are insulated.
Right.
But his hotel wasn't insulated. And every time he turned on the heater, it set off the fire alarm.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
Maybe it was a radon detector. I don't know. But, you know, that is a hotel that is not used to having its. So that's the thing. But no, while I was in Florida with Clay, I went down there before the Space Coast Birding Festival so he would have time to film with me before he had to work the booth. And then he was like, hey, you want to help me teach my digiscoping class? You can do all this. You can help me with the smartphone stuff. So I ended up going to Space Coast. But what was really cool was I met some of the people who listen to our podcast. I met Pam Higginbottom,
okay,
who I've talked to a lot, and I met a woman named Jerry Ann Sweeney, who I'm doing this just for her. She, or maybe that was Pam that said that, but one of them said that they missed in the class, the digiscoping class, hearing glass, ice tinkling in glass.
You weren't drinking during the class? What's wrong with you?
I don't
thought that was your thing.
I don't drink all day long. I know it may seem like it.
When you're not around here?
I just drink when I'm around you, baby.
Yeah. I understand that, believe me.
So anyway, I'm going to be here, there, and everywhere, either editing video or getting some more bird footage and filming Clay. But yeah, I'm really excited. Who knows? Maybe this thing takes off. Maybe we can do other web series. Clay and I have some other ideas, but we'll see. I don't want to exhaust the Swarovski budget. But I'm just really excited that I'm in a position to give away a spotting scope. So, and again, the birds are the clue, but you don't have to be a hardcore birder. I think there are enough clues. It helps if you're a birder, but I don't think it's essential that you're a birder. You should be able to figure out what the theme is.
Okay.
So I'm really excited. Anyway.
So everybody who figures it out gets a Swarovski scope.
No! No, 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 no. What you don't you even do that. That is so not nice. No, what happens is if you guess the theme, what you think the theme is, you will email that to me. There will be instructions with each
episode.
The theme
of the entire series.
The theme of the entire series, yes.
Right.
And if you're correct, I will put that in a drawing, and then we'll probably just do that same thing where the rabbit chooses.
Okay.
But, because people seem to like that. That's one of my most popular videos on YouTube. I don't know why.
All right.
Yeah, so, and if you want to make sure that you don't miss an episode, you should probably sign up to my YouTube channel. I don't post a huge amount of stuff on there, but just make sure you sign up for it before May. Hopefully, other places will put this out so people will see this. And there will be fun digiscoping tips and birding tips in there too. And what's also cool is that everything, all the footage that's in this will be digiscoped, all the bird footage. And we will have digiscoped it with either digital SLRs, single lens reflex cameras, or actually quite a bit of it we've digiscoped with smartphones. Which I just think is bananas. When I think about the first time I went to the Rio Grande Valley and I had my little point and shoot getting pictures of, or not Rio Grande Valley, the first time I went to Florida and the Space Coast Festival and I had my little point and shoot and my spotting scope and I got, you know, kind of grainy pictures of scrub jays. And now I'm down there with my phone, scrub jays, sending that to Instagram. Anyway, so it's cool. I'm excited. Woo! All right, where do I go with this next? Okay, hey, have you been following Project Snowstorm on the interwebs?
No.
Well, you should.
Why?
Well, Project Snowstorm is that thing with Scott Wiedensahl and a bunch of other researchers where they said, oh, hey, there's kind of this major snowy owl eruption going on right now. Okay. And we should maybe try to harness some of that information. And so they did a fundraiser. I think they set for 40 days that they were going to try and get $20,000. They got it in, I think, 2 weeks. Even awesome. I contributed to it. You can still contribute to it. $20,000 was their bare bones goal. But if they get more than that, that's more satellite transmitters that they can get to put on these owls. I'm super excited because Frank Nicoletti here in Minnesota tagged a snowy owl in Ramsey, which is kind of the northwest edge of the Twin Cities.
Okay.
And these transmitters are not like the old kind. I mean, they give you a lot of data all at once. And with some of them, they can use Google Earth to pinpoint exactly where that snowy owl is perched. And they had one where they were kind of freaking out because the bird wasn't moving at all, and it was on a roadway, and they thought, oh crap, did this thing die? Well, they went to Google Earth, and they looked around, and they're like, and they discovered that there was a real-time traffic camera there, and they used the real-time traffic camera to aim where the snowy owl was supposed to be, and they saw a perch that it could be on. So this is the kind of cool stuff that they're able to do. They've been figuring out things like they're flying out over open water at night, presumably hunting. Now, they said ducks. Clay and I got into an argument about this because he doesn't think a snowy owl could carry a duck. But they could be going for gulls. We do know snowy owls eat waterfowl.
Duck weighs more than a gull?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Ducks, well, like diving ducks you would find in the ocean.
Oh, okay.
Because they're going to submerge.
Well, I'm assuming at night that the bird would just swoop over and grab a duck that was just sort of bobbing along on the water.
That's what a lot of birds do. You know, gulls and ducks.
Right.
But if it's a heavy duck, that snowy owl isn't going to necessarily carry it back to land.
All right.
Then there was this other crazy story about this guy that trapped a snowy owl that was super stinky, one of the worst smells ever. Okay. And afterwards, the ranger was like, oh, hey, you know what? There was a snowy owl perched on a dead dolphin chasing turkey vultures off. So that was probably that owl. It was probably smelling dead dolphin there because that's some pretty nasty
dolphin?
Stuff. Yeah, dolphins die.
No, oh, no kidding. I didn't think they were immortal.
So, yeah, so, I mean...
But here... that doesn't surprise me that they would stink, because you were telling me about what was the other, like, the great horned owl eats skunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they always stink when they bring them in.
Yeah, yeah. But here are these snowy owls hanging out at beaches.
Right.
And, you know, they're going to eat whatever they can eat. And sure. And so this sounds like, oh, man, this is a gigantic piece of mammal I can eat off for a few days. And chasing off... turkey vultures. Mm. The other thing that the researchers are finding with Project Snowstorm is that the owls they are trapping, they're weighing them, and they're all fat and sassy. So it's just been the common belief that, oh, poor snowy owls, when they come down, they're just starving to death.
Right.
That this traveling just may be part of what they do, and they do quite well.
Now, is this boom for the snowy owls, is that in relation to a boom year of... prey down here that they're pushing some other predator?
Well, what seemed to have precipitated this event,
right?
Because I don't know if you remember, we talked about
this. We talked about this, yeah. The lemmings, yeah.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is they came down here looking for food, and if they're finding a lot of food, is this a boom year for some other kind of prey that this is going to affect?
If it was a boom year, it's not anymore.
Well, yeah, I would say the prey that is the predators that are normally down here, like the red tails and the owl, the other owls and things like that, are they being affected by having this other predator?
We don't know yet. And there are definitely interactions. I'm not going to link to it on the blog, but if you just Google...
missed connections.
Snowy owl, peregrine falcon. Peregrine right. falcons do not like snowy owls and attack the crap out of them. And there are a ton of videos and photos that you can see. You don't really see too many red tails going for the snowies. But that definitely could be an issue, is that they're usurping it. But it's interesting. Some snowy owls are concentrating in certain areas, like the ones that we've had here in Minnesota. They've been there several weeks. There's presumably 30 minutes south from where you and I live in kind of a 4-mile span.
Okay.
But then there are some owls that are having trouble finding food. I shouldn't say having trouble finding food, but that are still moving. The other big news this week is that there's been a snowy owl hanging out in Washington, D.C., and it's been hanging outside the Washington Post. The Washington Post never heard of snowy owls before until one sat on their building. And that bird, it looks a little rough. Even the feathers look a little rough on that bird, but, you know, if it can find food, it'll do okay. I was talking with my friend Mark Martell from Minnesota Audubon about this, and there are so many pictures of snowy owls in trees this year, and that's not something they ever have to deal with. And I said, man, can you imagine, isn't that weird, just seeing a snowy owl in a tree? He said the snowy owls are probably like, this is great, we need to have these up where we you can see so much from up here, and you can hear all around you. He's like, they probably just love the trees once they figure out how to perch on them. You know, whereas I'm kind of thinking the snowy owl's like, trees, what's with all these trees? He's more of a glass half full guy, thinking the snowy owls are like, this is awesome, dude. So anyway, please check out some of the research with Project Snowstorm. If you can donate, please do. If you can't, I understand. Budgets are tight. We can all only do so much. I wish I could join every single bird organization out there, but I can't. But yeah, even I scrounged together $25 to, I think the level I gave was Bucket O' Lemmings. So.
All right.
Anyway, I'm just fascinated by the internet, our ability to communicate, and the technology available that we're able to study a snowy owl eruption in real time and not just be freaking out and figuring out what's going on afterwards. So it's pretty exciting. Okay. So up next, there is an artist named Dennis
Franz
Hlinksy.
Okay.
And, he made a bunch of videos of murmurations, or I wouldn't even say they're all, these are murmurations, but flocking birds.
Okay.
And not birders flock, but flocking birds. He used software to isolate their flight paths and then turned all the photographs into a video. So you have these really stunning images of flocks, it's but you can beautiful. See the individual birds and even the stills of the birds where you can see the spirals and just the flight path of the individual birds. It's really quite cool.
That is lovely.
So, yeah, definitely go to the website. We've embedded one of the videos on this blog link, but it's really amazing stuff. How many times can I say really? I need to, what's that thing, Upworthy, where they write all the sentences that make you want to click, and then you click on it and you hate yourself.
Except no one does, yeah.
Oh, people click. There was just that one recently of people linking to some woman that's like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing. And it's like, oh, I clicked on the link. I saw the name of the website and I became suspicious. And then I was like, oh, it's just a woman who's a human spirograph. You know, the woman who's rolling around in the charcoal.
Yes, I wondered how she got off those canvases.
Oh, maybe she had a rope that she climbed up.
No.
Anyway, right. It looked messy. So that's really cool. Okay, the big story in the last couple of days, the Pope, bless his heart. The Pope got some kids, did some kind of thing in the Vatican where the kids released white doves as a symbol of freedom.
Okay.
And as soon as they released the doves, a gull and a crow attacked the doves.
Right.
It didn't say that the attack was successful, but the doves were pushed out of the way, out of the view of everything. And this is a classic example of why releasing white doves at weddings or any kind of symbolic ceremony funerals is just a bad idea.
Well, I have to imagine these weren't wild birds. These were birds that had been raised in captivity. I mean, they weren't like racing pigeons or anything.
No, they weren't even racing. If they were racing pigeons, they would have stood a chance.
Yeah. So.
No, these were very ornamental, decorative white doves that just, you know, they were built to be pretty, not necessarily to be aerodynamic.
Right.
And I linked to it, and somebody asked me on the Bird Chick page, they said, why don't I understand what's going on here? You know, the gulls and crows aren't predators. Yeah, they kind of are. They're just not as efficient about it as birds of prey. You know, birds of prey, they have the talons on their toes. They can squeeze and kill and rip. And it's, unless you're a Cooper's hawk, you can dispatch your prey fairly quickly. Gulls, it's not pretty. They try to they swallow a lot of things live. A gull isn't a good way to go.
Right.
I saw a very disturbing video of a common eider female. Her chicks had just hatched. She goes into the ocean. Two black-backed gulls tag team her, and in less than 2 minutes, they swallow her entire brood live. It's gross. And crows, well, I've seen crows go for baby rabbits. They kill snakes, just eat the livers out of them. It's not something they do all the time. It's something they're capable of, and it's messy, and it's gory, and it's not fast. That's not how you want to... If you're going to come back as a prey animal, those are two birds you really don't want eating you. So these birds pretty much saw a white bird that looked unusual from all the other pigeons that they're used to. And they're like, hey, I bet we can eat this. And for the record, it's a hooded crow. These are not North American species. And the gull is a yellow-legged gull. So it's just a bad idea to do this. And I have wondered about that because I remember when I worked at the bird store, I would periodically get phone calls from people saying, hey, we want to release doves for such and such's funeral. Do you sell them? And I would say no. And I wanted to try and bring up to them tactfully, maybe don't release doves at the funeral. Because I always wondered, just like, oh, I'm going to release some white doves.
Yeah.
And then bam, there's the Cooper's hawk. Is that really, how are you going to justify that at a funeral?
I don't know. I don't think people actually do that anymore.
They do it at funerals and weddings. Mm. It's one of those things that I struggle with because there's also the whole campaign to get people to stop releasing balloons because balloons just end up being trash in our waterways and in our oceans and, you know, ultimately they're going to kill a few seabirds.
Basically, don't celebrate your wedding. Nobody cares.
Well, except maybe your mom. And by that, I mean whoever.
Throw your mom into the air.
No comment. But I wonder about that, you know, because I'm pro that whole balloons blow campaign about, you know, telling people, hey, don't release balloons at ceremonies. But I recently had an email from a project I was working on, and the person who was working was like, yeah, I'm really sorry I haven't emailed on this project. My son died. We did this really wonderful ceremony where we all released messages to him in balloons, and I'll let them go. And I thought, now is not a good time to bring up to him the whole balloons blow.
And there's a helium shortage.
Is that still going on?
Oh, yeah. There's only one place that still makes helium. It's very hard to find.
Is this like a finite thing? Is this because of...
Yeah, there's only so much helium.
Then why are we still releasing balloons? It seems like we might need helium for other things.
Well, what else are we going to use it for? For our airships?
For talking funny. That gag never gets old. Hi, Bill. How are you?
I think we're just going to have to start filling children's balloons with hydrogen.
Oh, the humanity. So anyway.
Safe hydrogen.
There's some really fantastic pictures of these crows and gulls attacking pretty white doves. Don't release doves. Don't release doves. Don't release
them. Don't release anything. Keep all your emotions trapped in a box.
Release your children. Release your children out in the wild. That's okay. Right. Okay. Oh, here's something fun.
We'll see about that.
The Kansas Secretary of State, Chris Kobach.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not a fan of federal interference. And he apparently thinks that prairie chickens don't need any kind of help. So he has introduced Senate Bill 276, which would prevent U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service from imposing regulations to save particularly lesser prairie chickens' habitat from destruction. And they're at risk in Kansas, especially from wind turbines. And here's the thing. It's not that the chickens are going to fly into the turbines. It's that they won't nest next to them. They have an instinct that says, hey, don't nest next to anything tall. Because okay. If you do that, there's a hawk that's going to perch on that, and it's going to come down and eat you and your babies.
Right.
So they know not to nest next to trees, and so there's habitat set aside, which looks like, you know, big wide open space. So, you know, wind companies think, hey, this is a great spot. There's wind here, there's wide open space, no one's going to be bothered by this. Well, the prairie chickens are, and lesser prairie chickens in particular, they really should be endangered, but it's a whole complicated thing with the deal that they're not, because private landowners don't want federal government interfering with how they run their property, and their vague insinuations that if the lesser prairie chicken goes on the endangered species list, that they'll just get rid of whatever chickens are there, so that way they don't have the government telling them what to do. It's a mess. But this guy in Kansas wrote this bill, and it makes it a felony for any federal agency to intervene on behalf of prairie chickens. And it's also saying, well, you can't put them on the migratory bird treaty because they don't migrate. So it's just craziness what's going on in this state to try and keep the federal government out of it. It's almost like an article from The Onion. So if anybody's in Kansas, I don't know what we can do to help you out down there.
Well, aren't they game birds? Don't people hunt them?
Well, you can't hunt lesser prairie chickens because they're almost gone.
Okay.
In some states, greater prairie chickens are considered a game bird, but it's all about bag limits. Oh my gosh, did I tell you about some of the really interesting things that I heard Jeff Gordon say at the Space Coast Birding and Nature Festival?
Oh, please tell me.
No, this was fascinating. Okay, first of all, the poor guy, he had to do a keynote outdoors in 41 degrees.
Oh boy.
Well, they had planned an event that was outdoors and it was going to be kind of a picnic type deal. And in Florida, that's usually not such a bad idea, but then the polar vortex affected them. But Jeff Gordon, the president of the American Birding Association, is such a fantastic speaker. He is engaging no matter what the temperature is. And I've heard him speak before, and I stayed and I listened to him speak. But he was talking about the duck stamp, and that, he buys a duck stamp. He's pro-duck stamp. He encourages other people to buy the duck stamp. But he understands why people have an issue buying the duck stamp who are against hunting.
Okay.
And he brought up a couple of things that I thought was very fascinating. That number one, a hunter can go in and shoot a brace of king eiders, like several in a day, let's say mm-hmm. four in a day. He's probably seen that many in his lifetime. So that hunter is going to have more of an impact on king eiders in a day than he is on his entire life. So I thought, okay, that's kind of interesting. The other thing was hunters going in and shooting bird species, you know, taking out a certain number of ducks. They're allowed to do that with their duck stamp, but it is illegal for a birder to go on the same land and play a taped call of something like a clapper rail and get that rail to crawl out without it being hunted, but to show it to 40 people. So to have an impact on that bird for one day by just getting it to move in a different direction by playing the taped call. And I thought that was fascinating. And then I thought it would be a cool idea of what if birders could get a duck stamp, and with that duck stamp, you're allowed to play taped calls at U.S. Fish and Wildlife lands.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I mean, isn't it something like 98% of the duck stamp goes to habitat maintenance?
It goes to habitat acquisition and some maintenance.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, you're going to be allowed to, like, take a lot of the bird life out of that by shooting the crap out of it.
But I mean, we're not talking about establishing or are we talking about establishing non-hunting territory by buying this, in theoretical, bird stamp?
Well, I think that's what birders would like to have done with their own separate stamp. But it would be interesting if birders could get some kind of perk out of purchasing the duck stamp. And a lot of people argue that playing taped calls is a negative effect on the birds. Okay. So could we get, you know, the privilege of playing taped calls? It was the first.
If you're talking about, I get what you're talking about here. I think in terms of the taped calls, you're right that the
it's not as much of an impact as shooting them.
If they, you know, but I mean, if you want to create non-hunting lands with a separate birder stamp, that's a whole.
But as
rigmarole,
as it stands on U.S. Fish and Wildlife, where someone on U.S. Fish and Wildlife land, where someone is allowed to hunt if they have the duck stamp, it is illegal for me there to play.
But we're also talking about hunting season is a very specific set time period where you can hunt and not hunt.
Set a specific time period for when you can play taped calls and not play.
But that's what I'm talking about is people are playing, in theory, people are playing, you know, taped calls.
Well, in theory, the worst time to play taped calls is during breeding season. Yeah. So if you want to play taped calls on U.S. Fish and Wildlife land during breeding season, you have to have a duck stamp.
That sounds sensible to me.
That is just something I was like, wow, that really makes me think. That brings the whole duck stamp. Actually, if I could have my druthers. And here's the thing. It's not going to happen. The federal government moves at such a glacial pace. It's really phenomenal that we have a duck stamp that does what it does. There's no way you're going to get the federal government to create a birder stamp. I just, as someone who works in the federal government and sees all the BS that has to be done, I just don't.
I had this discussion with somebody recently. We were talking about bureaucracies. And, you know, they were talking about the inefficiency of the government. And I said, that's, you know, I understand that, but I like bureaucracies. I like going into a restaurant and assuming that the food I'm going to eat there is safe. Because somewhere, it's somebody's job to make sure that it's safe for this to eat. So when people talk about, here's the thing, when people talk about small government, it seems to me that very rich people are always talking about fewer government regulators. That we don't need all these meat inspectors to make sure that this meat is safe. And that's when you get these cholera outbreaks and E. coli outbreaks. But I don't have, you know, I don't have a problem with bureaucracies. Yeah, getting my driver's license renewed is a bit of a pain. It takes like, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. But I don't have a problem with.
My problem is, and I would be with you with that. It's just that from what I've seen as being a federal employee, the number of emails and the number of The number of paperwork that has to get done and stupid tests that have to be taken because so many people have not done their job and done something stupid. So all these redundancies have been made to make sure that everyone knows you're not supposed to do it.
But I'm sorry, this is extremely cynical to me that I understand that this makes it an inefficient system. But if these checks and balances weren't in place, there are people, so many people waiting to rip off the government. To make sure that, you know, want like three levels of checks and maintenances in there to make sure
that happen. But apparently so many people have been so successful that so many federal employees are caught up in the minutiae of doing bureaucracy BS instead of actually getting things done. Sometimes I think that there is someone in the HR department of the federal government that hates the National Park Service, and they're just trying to dismantle it with nothing but bureaucracy. Mm. And if you think I'm just being some kind of crazy libertarian, get a job as a federal employee, and you'll be like, oh.
Yeah. All right.
I love being a park ranger. I don't like working for the government. Anyway. What else we got? Let's talk about something positive.
All right.
Cornell Lab of Ornithology has released a really cool new app, and it's free. This is not for a hardcore birder. This is for someone casually interested in birds. This is for someone who's being introduced to birds, someone who has a mild interest. It's called the Merlin app. And what it's designed to do is, okay, all of you out there who have friends who know you're a birder, and you're at a party, and they come up to you and say, yeah, I saw this bird, and it was like turkey size and it was purple and blah. You enter in their description and you do the little check mark thing, and then Merlin comes up with a series of birds and pictures of what it could be. And I've been testing it out at parties, and I've been testing it out at the Park Service when people come up and ask me bird questions. it works really well. And I don't know if you remember a while back in the podcast, we were directing people to go to the Merlin game system where, you know, it would ask you what features you noticed on certain bird photos. It's really cool. It's right now it's just for the common birds, but as I understand it, they're going to be tweaking this program over the years, and it might be something even bigger and better for even intermediate and hardcore birders. But download this app, check it out, give Cornell your feedback, share it with your friends. It's free. You don't have to pay anything for it. It's really amazing.
Okay.
I highly recommend Merlin. And I also have to tell you, I can't officially talk about this stuff yet. There are two new apps that are coming, not from Cornell, that are going to be really cool.
All right.
I want to talk more about them, but I can't. But
I'm not going to encourage you.
Things people have been asking for, they're coming.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. I haven't played with them, but it sounds promising.
All right. What else we got?
Chicken shoes.
Same to you.
No, high heels with, instead of like the pointy heel, there is a chicken foot.
That's kind of hideous. I can't imagine anyone wearing those.
Oh, I could imagine someone on Sex and the City a few years ago would have been wearing these.
No, those are terrible. Those are absolutely awful. I saw, actually, there was a thing going around online of this fashion designer had created a set of different heels, and one of them was like a brass knuckle where you could hold the heel, and there was like, you know, there were grips for your fingers.
That actually sounds sensible.
And then you could actually hit somebody with the stiletto end of it. And then there were a whole bunch of other different ones. Like one was a paint spill, and I forget what the rest of them were like. But no, the chicken. No woman wants to walk around with chicken feet on the back of her feet. No woman wearing high heels wants her feet to be compared to chicken feet.
You know, it'd be really badass if it were like eagle feet.
Yeah, if it was like a claw or something. Yeah, that would be interesting. But nobody thinks chicken feet are cool.
I bet you Katie Ballou does.
Somebody who owns chickens might, yes.
Look, if I were going to a party and I had the right colored dress for this, I'd wear these. Why not?
Uh-huh. All right. Scarred. Scarred for life.
I was scarred. Scarred for life. And if you get that reference.
You were alive in the 90s.
You were alive in the 90s and you know who Dave Foley is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So just because birding is slow and it takes forever for memes to catch up with him, there is another Hitler video.
Oh, thank God.
Do you want to describe the Hitler meme?
All right. There was a movie called... No, it wasn't called Downfall.
Downfall.
The movie called Downfall. It was based on the memoirs of one of the women who was a secretary in Hitler's bunker. And it basically describes the last days of Hitler. And there is a scene where Hitler is describing a plan to fight off, I think it's the Russians, advancing. And he and his aides explain to him that that can't happen because of such and such. And Hitler orders everybody out of the room and has a breakdown where he screams at everybody. People have taken this and applied it to basically...
everything.
Every piece of news that you could think of. The fact that they didn't like Pokemon. They didn't like the new Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
They didn't like the ending to Sex and the City 2. They did basically everything. It was just this...
okay.
Went everywhere.
Time out. You and I have both just referenced Sex and the City twice. All Can right. I just point of order? We no longer mention that show in this particular podcast.
That's fine. I don't care. But anyway, I was just trying to give you... It wasn't just geeky things.
Yeah.
It was everything.
And there was a bird one. I think something about Hawaii being added. Somebody did one on that.
Right,
it was really
funny. Right, yes. It was, yeah.
And so somebody sent me this today, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's another Hitler thing. Mm. It's actually really funny. This one is really
good.
They're
all very funny.
They're all very funny. But this one is about a wren split, and a wren that has a real stubby tail that's been seen in Colorado, and someone tells Hitler he's wrong. And it's this one is really good. So if you're not familiar with the Hitler meme at all,
right,
you're going to think this is hilarious. If you're familiar with the controversy about the stub-tailed wren in Colorado, you're going to think this is hilarious. If you're someone who's well-versed with the Hitler meme, you're going to find this amusing.
Yes.
And I also feel like I need to say with this podcast, for people who aren't familiar with this, we are not endorsing Hitler.
It's come to that, has it?
This movie, The Downfall, is probably a movie that... not a lot of people would see, but everyone knows this.
It was a very popular movie.
Was it really?
Yeah. Well, as far as, like, historical dramas go.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, that's not something that's really sweeping the world. All you know, it's no Zoolander.
Right.
But this actor is really well known for his... What, isn't that the dream, though? You know, you do this part and you do it so well that people make memes out of you as Hitler reacting badly to anything from mustard to artisanal toast to birding to Pokemon.
Great.
Anyway, so yeah, check out the...
All right.
I think that is all I have to talk about.
Oh, thank God.
Unless there's anything you want to talk about. No. Oh, I was going to talk about this.
All right,
this will be our last story.
We'll see about that.
Don't make me look up bird jobs. Please don't make me start talking about bird jobs.
Oh, poor you. Yes, I always force you to look up bird jobs.
No, you hate it when I talked about bird jobs.
I hated it when you brought up like 16 of them.
Well, that's because they were all awesome.
No, they weren't.
They all had strange requirements. So there was a couple in Pennsylvania who found out from the city inspector that their bird feeders were not up to code. And I think we've touched on this a little bit before, that there are a lot of housing additions, condo associations, where they have rules in their little tiny communities about whether or not you can or cannot feed birds.
Right.
But this is a city in Bethlehem Township. Well, I guess it's a township, not a city. Where they regulate the type of bird feeders you can have. They have to be squirrel proof, and they have to be the sort that have some kind of seed catcher, so seed can't get on the ground so you don't attract rodents. And so this elderly couple was, you know, feeding birds, and apparently their neighbor didn't like it and turned them into the city, and nothing happened. So the neighbor turned them into the city again and even turned them in with photos and basically just pestered the city. He was like, they have a bird feeder and they're attracting all these birds. And I'm pretty sure that's exactly the way the phone call went. And so the city came out and said, yeah, oh, hey, you know, you can be fined $1,000 a day for not having a squirrel-proof bird feeder and not cleaning up the stuff because you're attracting critters. And on the one hand, I can kind of see the idea behind, hey, maybe don't be the crazy bird lady down the street with 30 different bird feeders. But regulating the exact kind of bird feeder you can have in an effort to not have squirrels and rodents, I just think that's ridiculous, because you're going to have that whether you're feeding birds or not.
Well, who cares how many squirrels you have, first of all?
Well, this community does.
That's kind of crazy. I get it if you're, you know, if you're attracting, like, mice and rats, but nobody gives
you're gonna
a crap
attract
about
rice,
squirrels. Yeah.
Rice and mats. You're going to attract rats and mice, whether you have a bird feeder or not.
Right.
If you have a dumpster, you're going to get rodents.
Yeah.
That's why hawks hang out in your yard.
All right. So is this is there any resolution on this story?
Well, they've come to an understanding, but they're going to review the ordinance because it's just worded poorly.
Right.
But, you know, it also brings up another thing here in the article. It says, a homeowners association in Nevada also has banned bird feeders. Meanwhile, Hawaii has a law against feeding feral birds.
Right.
Which I find fascinating. You're not allowed to feed feral birds.
We've talked about that. Yeah, I've...
Hawaii hardly has any native birds left. Pretty much everything there is feral. So basically, Hawaii is saying, don't put out a bird feeder.
But the ordinance is basically unenforceable there. Okay. All right.
So, anyway, that's it.
All right, now is the part where we find out if that was actually the last story you wanted to talk about, because this is the part where I do the wrap-up.
The Indian talked about Sibley a bunch of years ago, and I linked to it, and it's really funny.
A bunch of years ago?
Well, somebody linked to an Onion article where some crazy old lady was taking Sibley to task for his first edition for having some issues in it.
Right.
Books have misprints. There's a big misprint in the first edition of 1001.
Oh, is there? I hadn't heard about that.
You know what? I still get emails from people who get it. Thank you so much. Yeah, I didn't know that caption was mislabeled at this point. But anyway, the cool thing is the second edition, it's been fixed. So good. If you have the first edition, you have a collector's item.
Yes.
But anyway, where was I going with this? Oh, anyway, The Onion did a thing about Sibley, and I linked to it, and it was hilarious. And then someone's like, yeah, I laughed at this when this came out a few years ago, and I looked, and the link was like from 2007. I made a rookie internet mistake.
All right. So, once again, this is episode 163.
I love you.
Of the Bird Chick Podcast. If you have any questions for Sharon, you can talk to her on Twitter. She is at Bird Chick, or you can email her where she is, Sharon@birdchick.com.
Up all night.
All right.